Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right, it is Friday again. You know what that means. We get to spend the next 15 to 20, maybe 25 minutes together discussing the absolute circus that is politics in the United States of America. Now, I say politics. The reality is that we are looking at the loss of rights, the rapid rise of fascism, and the word politics can often just sound so tedious and boring. Really, what we're talking about here goes so far beyond that. So, look, a couple of notes I'm going to make before I jump into these articles. One is that I basically kind of decided the timeline that makes the most sense as far as when to post these types of things. Again, I'm not trying to go too far on like the U.S. political side, but I know that it is important. I asked for some feedback last week, and I did receive some. I got a few people, thank you, from outside the U.S. reaching out. And they all said it's important for us to hear. The U.S. politics is important on the geopolitical spectrum. It affects other countries. So where there is kind of an outsized or exaggerated response in the U.S. right now, it's worth talking about. So I will continue to do that. On Fridays, we'll do a summary of what's going on. And then on Tuesdays, I believe that the goal is going to be to focus on one specific aspect and dive in a little bit deeper. So last week I did the NSPM 7 announcement. This next Tuesday I'm going to be speaking further on ICE and the acceleration of National Guard deployments in the U.S. And I already recorded that episode. What I'm going to try to start doing is these Friday episodes, for example, I record them on Thursday just so that the content is obviously as up to date as possible. And I think I'm going to do the same thing with the Tuesday episodes. It poses a little bit of a risk because if I get sick on Monday when I record it, then it doesn't get posted on Tuesday. So I'll have to post a different episode. And I'm trying to stay a week ahead on most episodes, but, you know, understanding at the same time that where things move fast, it's important to speak about them as up to date as possible. One other note that I want to mention is that if you've listened to the other Friday episodes, there's a lot of sources. And so as I try and put them into the notes, unfortunately, while my podcast host says that I can do up to 4,000 characters, each link that I put in there for some reason counts as like 150 to like 400 characters. I think it's because it's counting every character in the original link, no matter how many characters I actually use in the note itself. Anyway, long story short, I have to like cut those way down so that they're just a few words long. And so that each link doesn't necessarily explain super well which article you're going to be clicking on. But I'm trying to do my best to include all the sources there so that you can read these articles. Okay, so jumping right into this today, I've got 16 different sources we're going to be reading from or talking about here. Again, I'm going to kind of try and go through them quickly so that this doesn't end up being like a 30-minute episode. Last week did end up being 25 or 6 minutes, and that is mostly due to the fact that it was 2 weeks worth of coverage. But to have, you know, 16 different sources, 16 different topics here to mention in just 1 week's time, and each one of them I feel is highly relevant, goes to show just how fast things are changing. And as always, I must mention that I've probably missed some stuff. Well, I know I've missed some stuff. I actually had to choose to leave some stuff out due to time, but this should give a good gist of the direction that we took this week. All right, so we're going to start off. This is from, well, the source I'm going to pull this from is timesofnews.com or now news, timesnownews.com. But it's all over the place. This is just the one that popped up when I first searched for it. Well, what I should say is that it's interesting that while this happened on a major news network, that news network, they chose not to report on it. They chose not to highlight it. And many others did not as well. From a mainstream media standpoint, this did not get talked about. And that is extremely disturbing to me. It does show to me that that most mainstream media is now complicit in sticking with right-wing talking points and even enabling them. This happened on CNN. It was an interview that was being done with Stephen Miller. And the recording that we have, you know, people were able to record the original, which was an interview that he was doing. He was asked essentially regarding Trump's rolling out of the National Guard in Chicago and Portland. And first thing Stephen Miller does is lie. And he says, we have authority to do this because, you know, this was taken to court in California and we won that case. It's not true. They lost the case in California, which is why the National Guard had to leave Los Angeles. So he lied. But then he used a word that has never been used and should never be used about the President of the United States. He said that he has plenary authority. If you're not familiar with the word, which I was not at the time, it is essentially to say that the president has absolutely unmatched, unbridled, and unlimited authority. Essentially that he is a king, that he can do whatever he wants, and that there is no one and there is nothing that can stop him. It is essentially the most undemocratic, un-American thing that a person could say about the president of the United States. It says there are no checks and balances. The opinion of the people does not matter. The will of the people, of Congress, of whatever. It's up to the president, and that's what gets done. Well, the second that Stephen Miller said this, as soon as the words came out of his mouth, plenary authority, he stopped talking. He shut up. He glitched out, and he stood there staring at the camera. You could see he was still moving. He was still swaying. The screen had not frozen. He just stood there. And the CNN interviewer was saying, hey, are you there, Stephen? What's going on, Stephen? Hey, did we lose you? What's going on? All right, folks, I guess we had a technical glitch. We'll come back. No doubt Stephen Miller either realized what he had just said and the implications of it, or, you know, the earpiece in his ear, whoever was on the other end, yelling at him to shut up and not say another word. Because the speculation was that there is a ton of legal issues with saying that. I mean, it puts, when it comes to the Supreme Court and all the other court cases, it puts them in legal jeopardy. It can cause a huge headache for them. Now, obviously, he's saying the quiet part out loud. He's saying what they are most likely saying behind the scenes and what they are trying to accomplish, but recognizing that it should not be said, at least not yet. They don't have the power to say that and get away with it. He shut down. Now, CNN had the chance here to say, excuse me, Stephen, did you just say plenary authority? Stephen, tell me why you said that. Stephen, do you actually believe that the President of the United States has this authority? They didn't say any of it. And not only that, they cut this out of their story online. They completely removed this whole interview, at least this whole version of it. They came back later, let Stephen re-say what he wanted to say, and they left the entire that part out of it. So if you go online, if you go to CNN.com and you watch the interview, you see the washed version. It's only because of the live version that was recorded by other parties that we even know this happened. CNN is complicit in this. This is one of the most terrifying things that happened this week, even though it wasn't a big, you know, declaration from the president that he was going to go out and do anything horrible or terrible. It was the slip of a tongue on an interview, but it really shows what's going on behind the scenes, and it shows that the media is not on our side. All right, now when it comes to the other part of that, which I just mentioned, which is the big scary things that Donald Trump is doing and, you know, deploying the National Guard and all of this, I'm going to get to that on Tuesday, so we're not going to touch on it a ton here today, but there has been escalations in National Guard troops being sent to various parts of the country, specifically Portland and Chicago. Protests are also picking up, and still, you know, 1% of what the Black Lives Matter protests were in 2020. There's small groups of people that are coming together. They're standing there peacefully. They're holding signs, and they are being targeted. One video shows a pastor who is in a position of prayer. He's got his hands in the air. He gets shot in the head by a pepper ball. It causes him to fall down. It explodes. He ends up suing. Who knows how that case will go. This is just one example of dozens, if not hundreds, of these types of responses. And by the way, he was shot by ICE agents who were up on a roof. They were completely out of danger. There was no risk. It's not like these protesters were advancing on them or doing anything. They were literally standing there, and they shot this pastor and many others. And this came right after Kristi Noem and others in an ICE, you know, meeting that was being filmed were in there, you know, saying prayers and pretending to be all super Christian so that they can go out and shoot pastors. We're going to talk about the legality of this on Tuesday. We'll talk about the judge's orders, how Trump is ignoring them, or what he's willing to do to go out of, to go around it. One of those things that he's willing to do is invoke the Insurrection Act, which is something that they are seriously considering. That's coming from their own words. And I will link an NBC article talking about the potential for that. So a lot of people are asking, okay, well, who from the Democrat side, who is standing up against Trump? Who is trying to do anything? And the truth is that most Democratic leaders are not doing anything. They are standing by, they're watching, twiddling their thumbs. Maybe they feel like, you know, they are looking for the legal ways to approach this, but the silence is deafening. Now, Governor J.B. Pritzker in Illinois is maybe the one that's sort of really standing up, at least vocally, in an attempt to protect his people. Newsom has done some of this as well. It's mostly, you know, memes and Twitter posts. But Pritzker has basically said, hey, look, you know, he's calling out Trump is unhinged. Trump probably has dementia. Trump is doing all this stuff that's super illegal. Trump has responded and said, you need to go to jail. Like, he's literally saying they should be in jail. We should be arresting them. Same thing. He's referring also to the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson. And J.B. Pritzker reacts and says in an interview on MSNBC, he says, quote, this guy is unhinged. He's insecure. He's a wannabe dictator. And there's one thing I really want to say to Donald Trump. If you come for my people, you come through me. So come and get me. And so he is, you know, he is willing to be out there and say, look, if you're going to talk the talk, then walk the walk. Come arrest me. If you really think I should be in jail and you have a legal reason to do it, then do it. And I think we will likely see an escalation this week in Chicago, unless Trump does what he sometimes does. They call him a taco because he, you know, Trump always chickens out. All right. On that note, a judge has also found that ICE has repeatedly violated consent decree over warrantless arrests. They are arresting people without warrants. They're going into homes. We talked about this a little bit last week, raiding apartment buildings. Judges have already said, hey, it's legal to basically arrest people on the street, in cars, walking around, whatever, just because they're brown or just because they have an accent or just because they're in a Latino neighborhood. But when entering someone's home, you are still supposed to have a warrant, and they are not doing that. So judges are calling that out. Judges are calling out the National Guard being deployed. Judges, at least local judges and some federal judges, are standing up for the law, standing up for the Constitution, but in many cases, Trump is just simply ignoring them or moving on to the next terrible thing that he can do to distract away from it before he comes back and does it again. One of those things is talking about, you know, we talked last week about how he's outlawed the burning of the flag, saying that you'll get a year in jail for burning the flag. Well, he said, he's quoted as saying that they took the freedom of speech away. That was his word for word. He said, I took the freedom of speech away in regards to burning the flag. This is a constitutionally protected act, and Trump is just blatantly saying that freedom of speech does not exist. Freedom of speech is not only under attack in this way with the flag, it's under attack in many ways that we've talked about. You can't use words like insurrection or fascist or terrorist or whatever it might be about the presidency, or they will come after you. Well, in response, University of Virginia students plan to hold an anti-fascist flag-burning event to protest this order by Trump. It's an organization called Friends Against Fascism Organization. You might know that that is F-A-F-O, which has other, you know, meanings as well. That's to happen tonight, tonight being Friday night. And it's yet to be seen if there is going to be a legal response, if there's going to be police present to arrest anyone who burns the flag. There was an interesting note on this. I saw somebody comment on a forum about it saying, what an interesting time it would be to be a student or a professor of philosophy or law, and to sort of take note of this moment and how people react. How far do students take it? You know, will we see flag burnings across the nation and hundreds or thousands of people willing to try the administration on this? And one interesting note that was made was that if that happens, if people are burning the flag, it's normally sort of an anti-American sentiment perhaps to do that. In this case, it is the opposite. It's a protest in order to preserve our rights, which is the most American thing that you can think of doing in regards to I shouldn't say the most American thing, but the most patriotic thing that you could do is to preserve the rights according to the Constitution. This week, Trump touted his administration's ties to Project 2025 after claiming over and over and over again that he had no idea who was behind it or what it was, and saying that there was a lot of really bad things in there, maybe some good things. And yet now he is just openly saying that, yes, of course, Project 2025 is what we are attempting to carry out. He also hosted an Antifa roundtable at the White House on Wednesday. According to independent.co.uk, Trump just hosted an Antifa roundtable at the White House. It was so much worse than you're imagining. It was at this roundtable where he said the quote I mentioned a few minutes ago about how we took away the freedom of speech with the flag burning order. They quoted anonymous people, apparently Portland residents, a man, it says, a quote, and a woman, and a business owner, all of whom absolutely want the National Guard to storm their city. I kind of support it 110%. It was one of the actual quotes from the meeting. Apparently at the table was a group of independent journalists who were far-right activists. They had a panel who basically went back and forth talking about Antifa and how terrible it is. Various quotes of things, people saying that Antifa had been around since 1945, since World War II, that it's been funded and organized since that point, which is all obviously a massive lie. They were claiming to have arrested the girlfriend of one of the founders of Antifa, and they were going to be interviewing them to find out information about the founders. There are no founders because there is no organization to have been found. Kristi Noem talked about how Antifa is just as dangerous as MS-13, as ISIS, and as Hamas. Her priority is making sure they never see the light again. I like that the article states this. It says, this, by the way, is the woman who grandstanded about staring down Antifa. She was up on the roof, and she basically bragged that she sat there and stared down at the evil of Antifa. When footage showed, it was actually a couple of photographers and a guy in a chicken suit. If you've seen some of the protests in Portland, it is just people dancing around in inflatable animal costumes, keeping it weird as Portland does. Anyway, there was a lot more that happened. I recommend that you read the article that I've posted here in regards to this Antifa roundtable at the White House, just to understand how unhinged it was. Pam Bondi testified before Congress this week as well in regards to, well, lots of different things, questions about the Epstein files, about the happenings at the Department of Justice, all sorts of questions. She refused to answer pretty much all of them. There was a photographer who took pictures of her folder where she had written her preparatory notes for how she could respond to certain questions that were asked. And it basically just showed how she planned to deflect away from different questions. There is a list out there that was read out to Congress of all of the questions that she refused to answer. It is pathetic and sad and calls into question, the success or the validity or the purpose of these congressional hearings when there is nothing anymore that comes out of them as people just simply refuse to respond, as we saw from Kash Patel the previous weeks. Donald Trump is considering pardoning Sean Combs, P. Diddy. Why would he do this? I don't know. It doesn't make sense. He's also considering pardoning Ghislaine Maxwell. It doesn't make any sense at all. No sense. Logically, it makes sense because these people may have something on him and there's deals being made. But from the standpoint of someone who is a Trump supporter, how can you possibly see this or hear this and excuse it? Where's the logic where if Trump is, innocent, if he's not a pedophile, if he's not any of these things, why is he considering pardoning those accused of child trafficking and pedophilia? And I'll note that with P. Diddy, I don't believe it was children that was involved, but he was charged with sex trafficking, transportation to engage in prostitution, those types of things. Trump administration continues to bomb boats in the Caribbean. The most recent one, I believe it's been four now, the president of Colombia has come out and said that these were not Venezuelan drug lords. These were Colombian citizens. Haven't seen more as far as proof of that yet or exactly the details. But the Senate has voted down War Powers resolution aimed at blocking his strikes on alleged drug boats. So there was a resolution to say, hey, we need to stop bombing indiscriminately boats driving around in the Caribbean. And the Senate said, no, we're voting that down. we want to be, or we're going to be complicit in the Trump administration ending the lives of people with no trial because they're driving around the Caribbean in a boat. The administration has not shown any proof that these people were, in fact, drug traffickers. No intelligence behind the decisions. It's just essentially, here's the video, which they're unclassifying to show the world their crimes of boats just being blown to oblivion. And all of this seemingly in an effort to manufacture a crisis, to manufacture consent in the potential invasion of Venezuela at some point. They have come out and said, Trump said, we plan to strike inside of Venezuela to hit these cartels on land. Which, can you imagine a foreign nation, the UK or someone, coming over and bombing sites in America, stating that they were killing terrorists or killing drug lords? It would be hard to deny that any such action would be a declaration of war. During a press conference, Trump was asked if he was going to suspend habeas corpus. Essentially, after you've arrested someone, they need to appear in front of the court. It's a way to sort of prove the reason for the arrest and the charging. Without it, it would make arresting people much easier, detaining people much easier, holding them for longer. There was much less due process, you know, checks and balances. But when asked this, sir, Mr. President, do you intend to suspend habeas corpus? His response was, who? Suspend who now? So either he just doesn't know what habeas corpus is, or he is just getting old and can't hear very well. But when repeated, he just passed the question off to somebody else because he didn't know. I'll let my handlers answer that question for me. Okay, last article here. This is in the San Antonio Current. Texas Governor Greg Abbott threatens to cut funding to cities with rainbow crosswalks. We've seen this sort of play out in Florida, where they have gone and painted over sidewalks time and time again, crosswalks. Anything that shows any sort of LGBTQ in public has been removed. And in this case, in Texas, they're using funds, legally appropriated funds to cities, as leverage to say, if you do not remove anything that's pro-LGBTQ, we will pull your funding. He's seeking the removal of symbols, flags, or other markings on any roads that convey social, political, or ideological messages. Now, I guarantee you, if there was some right-wing ideological message, that would not be required to be removed. It says that the statement doesn't specifically mention LGBTQ plus pride crosswalks, but it's clear that they are the target. I'll just end today by saying that it feels like we're at sort of a inflection point, which could turn into a tipping point. Trump is testing. He's testing how far he can go, testing what weight judges and the courts have to stop him, and how far he can push without any real pushback. Right now, he's winning that battle. Yes, there are judges who are saying no, but he's saying, I don't care. Here's what I'm going to do. And he's doing it. Legal battles draw on for months and years, especially when it gets to the Supreme Court. And guess what? The Supreme Court is doing almost everything in Donald Trump's favor, despite the unconstitutionality of it. I have no doubt that each week I will be able to easily pull up another list of 15 articles, each chronicling another step down into the descent of fascism, the removal of rights, the acceleration of violence, of oppression, of suppression. And I think that it's really anyone's guess as to how far it gets, as to what point it stops, and as to what will be done in response to protect our rights and the Constitution. We'll see you again next week. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.